from World Radio and the team that brings you the world and everything in it. This is Effective Compassion. When Mark Hibbelink came to Sunrise Community Church in 2009, it was dying.
I definitely thought that if I had the right music and the right, you know, cool programming, that like we could turn it into like the next Austin Stone, kind of like cool, hip.
Hibbelink figured they had a good location in South Austin. They just needed a great band, some flashy lights to bring in young families and young professionals.
We kind of did for a little while, and then there was that point where like the homeless started to be pushed out of downtown.
Austin periodically cracks down on the homeless who camp downtown near the popular entertainment districts. Some homeless people migrated to the city's south side near Sunrise Community Church.
We actually had to start dealing with it, and our church was like, we could call the cops on it, which is what pretty much everybody else does, and we were doing the same thing, or we could try to do something, and we just started doing something.
This podcast is about effective compassion. It draws from the Bible, from current interviews, and from history, specifically the history of Christian poverty fighting. This series is about the hard task of restoring hope.
Effective Compassion is made possible by listeners like you. Additional support comes from World Help, a Christian humanitarian organization working to deliver food and Bibles to starving, persecuted Christians in North Korea, the most dangerous nation for Christians. A gift of $20 sends a Bible and a week's worth of food to a North Korean brother or sister. More at worldhelp.net/podcast.
Last episode, we looked at the rise and fall of compassionate conservatism. But despite its failure as a political movement, Christian nonprofits kept right on working. Many of them continued to offer challenging, personal, and spiritual help. But what does that look like at ground level? Well, to answer that question, we're heading back to revisit a conversation with Pastor Mark Hibbelink. We first met him in Episode 1 when he took world reporters on a tour of a couple homeless camps. Anna Johansson returns with more of his story.
Sunrise Community Church wanted to help the homeless, so they just started doing something. They invited the homeless in, and not everyone was happy with the change. A lot of those trendy, wealthy people left because they didn't want to sit next to homeless people at church. Carissa Coe and I are here at Sunrise on a Sunday morning. The sanctuary has a cross, stained glass windows, burgundy-covered chairs. The congregation is older and mostly white. But the church goes out of its way to make homeless people feel, well, at home. They can sit outside and smoke under the live oak trees. Before the service, they can take a shower and get breakfast and coffee. Come here Monday through Friday and get clothes or food. Sign up for food stamps, pick up mail, visit a health clinic. Sunrise is a top-notch social service agency.
We've housed 300 people in the last 3 years. I'm on the mayor's team for ending homelessness now, and like we're connected. We have the only free medical mental health substance abuse clinic in the city.
Hibbelink offers to take Carissa and me to two encampments.
All right.
The first, under a freeway overpass.
I'll put you on this side.
It's noisy and windy and bitterly cold, even on a bright fall day.
So what do you come out here for usually?
Well, I mean, these are all my people. So, like, we come out here with social workers, and the city comes through once a month, and they just come through and destroy everything that's here. Mm-hmm. So this is actually what you're going to see is 3 days after a clean out. So, yeah, we'll go take a look.
One of the first things we see is a tent that looks like a cardboard castle. Cardboard walls, wooden pallets turned on their sides, a blue tarp across the top. Bungee cords and zip ties hold the thing together. There's a guy rummaging inside the tent. His scraggly hair and bad teeth show that he's been living rough for a while.
How's it going?
Not too bad, sure.
I was wondering whether they shut this down the other day. How far did they take you down?
We only had a problem with one guy, and he was driving the city of Austin truck.
Yeah.
He had a real attitude. Y'all leave that behind. Hey, I'm going to have you arrested. You don't have the authority to have nobody arrested. You're a city employee.
And yeah, you know those code enforcement guys are actually more—they're actually worse than the cops.
Well, this wasn't a cop; it was just a.
Hibbelink chats with this guy just like he would with anybody else. They talk about their mutual acquaintance, No-Legged Rick. The conversation is easy and relaxed. You could say that Hildelink majors in the P of CPS, personal. He knows the homeless men and women in his part of town. He understands their issues. They are people to him.
A lot of the folks that are down here because of the drug trade. There's some needle caps. And there's also, like, because there's so much heroin down here, there's also a lot of HIV that gets spread from dirty needles. So there's been, like, a run of HIV down here recently, too. Yeah, like, you look over here on the left. Look at how many caps are on the ground.
Most of the people who live down here are using heroin.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to. And then, like, once you're on it, like, that's when the stealing happens. Like homeless people are not normally thieves, other than, like, just needing to steal to survive. But, like, when they're on drugs, that's when the crazy stuff happens.
Hildelink calls himself a realist. That means he's in favor of harm reduction programs and distributing clean needles.
Like, you actually engage them where they're at and then help them back slowly in the gray. But that requires you putting your foot in the mud and actually having to deal with it and, you know, having to know drug dealers and having to hand out condoms and having to...
The second camp is tucked away in a city-owned greenbelt. The dense woods are crammed with live oak and cedar. Narrow tracks twist through the underbrush. To be clear, we're not out in the middle of nowhere. Across the street is an apartment complex, a Target, and an Office Depot.
I want to not disturb anybody, but I think we're all right.
Most shoppers have no clue what's just beyond the parking lot. But if you know what to look for, the path is easy to spot. Abandoned shopping carts and other junk point the way. This camp also has a reputation for drugs. Hildelink doesn't want to barge into a heroin camp without warning, so he whistles and makes a bit of a racket.
Hello?
Carissa and I follow behind, ducking under branches and stepping on cardboard and scraps of wood that someone has spread over the muddy trails. It's been raining a lot lately, so mud still squelches up over our shoes. Then the path opens into a clearing crammed with tents, heaps of plastic toys, and flattened boxes. A woman unzips the flap of a tent and steps out.
Hey, what's up? Hey, I'm Pastor Mark. I was looking for Pedro and Lisa.
Over there?
Yeah, what are you looking for?
The woman says her husband just got out of jail. Neither one of them has any kind of ID.
So did you have a Texas ID that was good?
No, I'm from Boston, Massachusetts.
Oh, okay.
Fighting with them to get my Social Security card.
Okay.
It's a common theme. Most people take a birth certificate or driver's license for granted, but after years of living on the streets, many homeless people don't have any of those documents. And getting your ID back can be a hassle.
You're on Social Security?
Yeah, I'm on disability.
Okay. Have you seen any doctors or anything here in town?
Yeah, I have her card.
Community care? Is it Angela Rubick or like the street med team that comes out here?
Yeah.
Okay. So I can work on that for you. We can use your medical records to get your stuff.
Hildelink tells the woman he'll get her a couple of bus tickets so she can come to the church and get her ID straightened out. We say goodbye, then pick our way through the trash to a different corner of the camp.
So this is pretty typical of a homeless camp. You generally have like 5 or 6 different tents kind of in a circle for safety. Dogs wandering around are pretty common. But there's generally like a part of the camp that's like the trash pile. There's generally a part of the camp that is like the place where everybody goes to the bathroom. It's generally a part of the camp where they have a fire.
Near one tent, 5 red Target shopping carts sit side by side, each one crammed with stuff. Carissa asks where it all came from.
Well... So there's dumpster diving, there's LARPing, which is what homeless people call stealing.
There's so much stuff piled around that it's hard to get anywhere. Bikes, tables, a glass chess set. There's an open tent, the kind you might see at a farmer's market, with Nerf guns and Lego Star Wars fighters hanging off it.
There was one camp that we used to go to all the time that had this creepy Easter bunny head in it. Just watch out for needles, guys. How are these people getting to their own camp? This is bizarre. Pedro, Lisa. Hey, what's up? Hey, it's Pastor Mark.
Lisa comes to the door of the tent. She doesn't have a jacket, just a thin shirt, and she's wearing slippers.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I just gave your mail to Pedro earlier.
Yeah, I know.
How do you even get to your camp? Like, I don't even know how to get to your door.
I know. Please forgive it.
I can tell you're with Pedro.
Lisa says she and her husband Pedro have had a hard time getting into housing. Hildelink says they should come by the church and get that straightened out. He's one of about 15 people in the whole city of Austin who's licensed to do something called a coordinated assessment. It's an evaluation that matches a homeless person with the best remedy for their homelessness. Once they get assessed, they're on the fast track to a solution, whether that's housing or other community resources.
Yeah, just come up on a Thursday sometime. We can knock all that out. You can come see the doctor, you can see a psych, you can see, you can get up, so you can start working your Social Security case, all that good stuff.
It's hard because Pedro has a hard time, like, getting going. He's got some disabilities,
yeah,
you know.
Right. All right, well, one of these days, you guys get up there and we'll do it.
So Thursday morning.
Yeah, Thursday morning.
Sunrise offers a wide swath of services to the homeless. But before the church could do that, it first had to earn the trust of other agencies in Austin.
You know, by acting like a social services organization and not like a church.
Hilblink says there's a lot of distrust and outright hostility towards Christians who work with the homeless.
And so, you know, we end up, like, I was in a situation where I was, like, I was at a community meeting with all these homeless organizations that were doing this work. And I'm in the men's bathroom, and there's this person, like, in the urinal next to me, and they were like, "Psst, I'm a Christian, too. Don't tell anybody." And I mean, like, that's how bad it is. Like, you can't be outed as a Christian in the homeless services community, because if you do, they're going to think that you're oversimplified and kind of messed up.
And from Hilblink's perspective, Christians deserve some of that hostility.
So they'd go do a worship service under the bridge, and all these churches come in from the outside, like from, you know, all the rich parts of town, and they come in and they just dump a whole bunch of stuff on them and then they leave. Mm-hmm. So it's relationshipless. Like, yeah. It's like, it's very much like, we like to call it like hit and run homeless work. And like that, unfortunately, not only like dehumanizes people, but it also makes the problem worse by creating more dependency.
In reaction to hit and run homeless work, Hilblink doesn't lead with the S of CPS. And he doesn't work with groups that do.
We're social service agencies first, and we'll talk about our faith. But like, there's all these churches that want to come and serve our homeless people, but they want to come and like turn it into a church service, and we don't allow it. Like, we have a no proselytization first policy.
That seems strange coming from a pastor. Carissa comes right out and asks him about it.
Why don't you want to share the gospel?
No, we do. I think it's better on the backs of. It's better on the backs of humanitarian care than it is, like, as a lead. Like, so I wouldn't say that we're...
Like, at what point would you share the gospel with someone?
When I get asked. Like, that's what we kind of say. Well, also, we're a church, so, I mean, it's pretty obvious in some ways, like, what we're about. So we get asked pretty quickly. I think that's part of it. But I think so much bad blood has been shed about the way that the gospel has been shared with homeless people that in some ways we're kind of cleaning up the mess of the past and trying to set a better future.
And what about the C? Challenge.
Or at what point should, like, challenge come into it? Like, challenging the person to actually get out of their situation, like work, that sort of thing. Like,
yeah.
Change what made you homeless, you know? So it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, I mean, so that's a tough question. I mean, I think that there's a so the first misconception, there's a lot of misconceptions in that sort. I mean, I'm not saying for you, I'm just saying that whole line of thinking is a lot of misconceptions. One is that they don't want to get out of their situation. Like, every single one of these people wants to get out of their situation.
Hilblink says almost every single woman you meet on the streets has been sexually assaulted multiple times. And he estimates that 80% of homeless people have some kind of untreated mental illness. He talks about the two women we just met.
Like, you could just hear how the mental illness had, like, trashed their lives. Like the idea that, like, she had been sexually assaulted, and how she dealt with sexual assault was with drinking, and how she dealt with drinking was finding a man. But as you're coming into that story, like, what you're hearing is this, like, twisted mental thing that's going on, and, like, it's to the point where you can almost start to just identify mental illnesses as you're hearing them. And
for a person whose life is so broken, challenge isn't going to look the same. Before you can even think about that, Hilblink says you need to stabilize just one aspect of their chaotic life.
What we're doing with our clinic is we're getting people medicated and getting them back to a point where they're seeing a doctor and addressing some of their issues. That stabilization place leaves the spot for the next stabilization place. I think the problem is, for most homeless people, they can't build the stairs. Like, they can't build the first stair, and because they can't build the first stair, they can't build any of the rest of the stairs.
Some agencies begin with the housing stair. Sunrise begins with mental health care and community.
But I would say, of our 1,400 clients, I would say about 150 of them, and that might be generous, I think could hold down a full-time job. Like, even in the best situation. Like, that's how ill they are. They're just so broken. I really don't honestly believe that you could put those people into normal jobs.
The same day we visited the encampments, Sunrise got a veteran into an apartment. The man had been homeless for 18 years. Hilblink says the man is now in a place to think about the future.
Now how do we address, like, the larger questions of, like, fulfillment in life? And, but he hasn't been able to think about those things for 18 years because all he's been thinking about is, where do I get my next meal? You know, what am I going to do to stay away from the police? What am I going to sleep tonight?
Sunrise puts a high premium on relationships. Their strategy focuses on personal connection and material help. They don't hide their faith, but they don't advertise it either. Faith was an element that most 19th century charity workers viewed as vital. Today, most private and government agencies don't even know how to bring it up. Next time, we'll see how that affects their strategy.
What if they don't really have many goals except just getting somewhere, like, safe off the street to live?
Then that's fine.
You don't have, like, a particular, this looks like success.
Our success goal is that they do not return to the streets, that they stay in housing and increase their quality of life.
Effective Compassion is produced by World Radio. This episode was written by Anna Johansson and Susan Olasky. Our technical engineer is Rich Rosel, and I'm the producer and host, Paul Butler.
Effective Compassion is made possible by listeners like you. Additional support comes from World Help, a Christian humanitarian organization serving the physical and spiritual needs of people in some of the world's most hard-to-reach places. Help for today, hope for tomorrow. Right now, World Help has a window of opportunity to deliver food and Bibles to starving, persecuted Christians in North Korea, the most dangerous nation for Christians. A gift of $20 sends a Bible and a week's worth of food to Christians living in this hostile country. More at worldhelp.net/podcast.
For just a few more weeks, you'll be hearing Effective Compassion on the world and everything in it each Saturday. Episode 9 releases February 29th. We also release Effective Compassion as a standalone series, and we publish new episodes each Tuesday. So if you want to listen sooner and help others find this new series, you can subscribe by searching for Effective Compassion on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen.